All right, listeners, welcome back to yet another week of My Consumerist Week with Tyler and Tyler. I am Tyler Mitchell, sitting here with my friend, Tyler Berry.
Hi, I'm Tyler. He's Tyler. We're both Tylers.
That's Tyler. And we just came back from the theater. We saw Baby Driver, Edgar Wright's new film.
Like, and we're super, like, fresh off of this thing. Like, not more than 45 minutes after leaving the spot.
Which means I am interested because I told him I did not want him to say a single word to me after seeing it.
Yeah, that was a really shitty car ride home, by the way. Like, I was not having fun not talking about this movie.
You didn't like the music we listened to?
I mean, of course. It's me. Of course I liked the music, but I wanted to talk about the movie.
Well, let's talk about the movie. What did you think of Edgar Wright's Baby Driver?
Oh my god, dude. Where do I even start? Okay, I don't like making these statements so quickly after seeing a movie, but I'm pretty sure this is my favorite movie of the year. And I don't really think it's that close.
Well, what's come out this year that you've seen? Let's qualify this.
I mean, we've seen a lot of movies together.
True.
So, what did we see? What have we seen?
We saw Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, okay, that was great.
So, I'm going to go through. Did you see Hidden Figures?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, Baby Driver is better than Hidden Figures.
Okay.
What else have I seen that's come out? I saw The Founder and I saw Split. Do you think Baby Driver is better than those?
I saw both of those movies, really liked both of them. Baby Driver's better.
Baby Driver is better than those two.
John
Wick Chapter 2.
I love John Wick, but I prefer Baby Driver.
Do you see the Lego Batman movie?
No.
I don't think that Lego Batman is better than Baby Driver, but I felt better walking out of the theater after Lego Batman because I was expecting nothing from Lego Batman.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Okay, here's the big question for you, because I know that you love this film. Is Baby Driver better than Get Out?
Oh, shit. Fuck. Okay. Oh, my God. That's so hard.
Yep.
Get Out.
Yes.
Get Out means more to me as a movie than Baby Driver does, but I think Baby Driver is a better movie. Get Out, the message and the reason for Get Out in 2017 means more to me as a person than Baby Driver as a movie, but Baby Driver, I think, is executed better, it's written better, it's acted better, the music, obviously, is phenomenal.
So what you're telling me is...
it's a better movie, but...
While Get Out is an important film, mm-hmm. socially, and I think it's important financially for the state of the film industry to show that a film like Get Out can be a success.
No question.
That, obviously, in the hands of someone like Edgar Wright, Baby Driver is, while less of an important film, more, I don't want to say it's executed better, it's more tightly edited, it's doing what it wants more readily.
It's more of a filmmaker's film.
Well, yes, that's Edgar Wright.
I know, but it's technically better made than Get Out, but it also... at the same time, I don't know if it's really fair to say that because it's such a completely different film from an execution and production standpoint than Get Out is.
My least favorite thing about Get Out was the mundaneity of the cinematography and editing.
Okay.
Like, that is a great... I really liked Get Out, and I like that Jordan Peele got that made, and I like all of that. So far as it being an excellently executed film that is visually unique to see and experience, it's not that. That's not what it's trying to be.
Sure.
So I would say that Baby Driver is more well executed than Get Out. What about Logan?
Oh, God, man, I forgot how many good movies have already come out this year. Logan is... probably, it's certainly not better than Baby Driver in my mind, but it's another situation where, like, I think it's really important that that movie came out this year. I think it's a great sending off point for Hugh Jackman's Wolverine character. I think it's the most technically well-made superhero movie ever, I would say.
That's a really big statement.
I mean, why? I guess I'm trying to think, like, from
a technical standpoint?
From a artistic filmmaking standpoint, what superhero movie has really done better with, honestly, like, that's kind of a minimalistic superhero movie when you really get down to it.
That has nothing to do with technicality. If we're speaking on a technical level, are you giving Logan credit for being the most technically impressive, from a technical standpoint, superhero film because it is a minimalistic story? It is a small film.
Yes.
Does that mean it's more technically impressive than something like Captain America, The Winter Soldier, or The Dark Knight? Those are technically impressive films.
Okay, that's fair.
I like the minimalism of Logan. You liked it more than I do.
I guess the minimalism is what really did it for me. I guess that's not, you're right, it's not fair to say it's the most technically impressive movie, because it's not, but it's probably my favorite superhero story. As a lone story, it's my favorite. And I think that's what really makes it, in my eyes, one of the best superhero movies that's ever come out.
I would say the best, yes, Logan has an intimate feel and story that might be the best singular enclosed story told in superhero film. And the only other film that I would think of, there are two films that you can take as superhero films with enclosed stories that aren't trying to push for sequels immediately. And they both have the trappings of being a period piece, and that is the first Captain America movie, Captain America, the first Avenger, and Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And
I was even gonna, I kind of thought you were going a different, I was even gonna agree that I think that, not being a period piece, but I think you can make that argument for Batman Begins as well.
And Iron Man. True.
Because I think those are better examples of superhero movies as character studies than the majority.
But they're setting up for sequels.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I guess in some way Wonder Woman and Captain America are, but those for Wonder Woman and Captain America the First Avenger are telling enclosed stories.
Yes.
Batman Begins is telling a story to lead into The Dark Knight. I mean, it ends on a stinger letting us into The Dark Knight.
That's true.
And, I mean, technically, so does Captain America the First Avenger, because he wakes up in modern day.
Ah, yeah, that's true.
He runs out into frickin' Times Square.
I guess my thinking on it is that those movies could stand alone and I'd like them just the same.
Yes.
And that's how I feel about Logan. I think Logan was such a great character study. And I think it's easier to do when you know it's your last hurrah with it. So I guess, you know, you got to take that into account a little bit when it comes to the storytelling. But I just think it was done so well. And X-23 was so great.
Well,
and
you're tugging at my heartstrings, because
yeah,
I'm a big,
I know.
You know, I'm a comic book reader, and X-23 is one of my favorite Marvel characters.
And I guess, you know, while we're on the subject, you could ask me if I thought Wonder Woman was better than Baby Driver, which no, I don't, but I did really, really, I was so pleased with that film. Like, it's been, for all intents and purposes, it's been a pretty solid first 6 months of the year, filmmaking wise, and I think Baby Driver is like the icing on the cake for the first half of the year.
I would agree. I'm trying to think back to the 2016 year and what I saw that really stuck out.
Okay, so like
and I'm
first half
really
of the
struggling
year, first half of the year, we would have had...
I mean, I'm thinking back to the first couple months of 2016. The films that I saw were... Hail Caesar, which might be my least favorite Coen Brothers film.
Oof.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which I saw...
Drunk,
no,
I assume.
No. We saw it at AMC. There was no alcohol consumed. I saw it because Katie wanted to see it, and it was a Valentine's Day thing.
Catherine.
She read the book, and she liked the book, and she loves Jane Austen novels. It was not altogether a horrible film.
I remember you telling me that it was kind of okay at parts.
Not good, but not horrible. Deadpool, which was fun. I'm not as high on Deadpool as the majority of the United States.
Hi. Majority of the United States speaking here.
Great. I don't know if you saw things like How to Be Single or Zoolander 2 or The Choice.
I did.
I saw all of those. Do you like any of those?
I did like How to Be Single. I won't lie to you. Especially like fresh off a breakup. It was kind of like a really fun movie to see at that time. Wow, I literally just forgot the second one that you said, but I definitely saw it, whatever it was.
The Choice?
Oh, no, the other one.
Oh, Zoolander 2.
Oh, yeah, because I was doing a podcast with my friends that was How bad all about was Zoolander sequels 2? And...
How bad was Zoolander 2?
It was one of the worst pieces of crap I've ever seen. We don't need to go into it.
Did you see The Witch? Because I want to see The Witch. Was The Witch good?
Oh, dude, I love The Witch. Okay, yes, good. I love The Witch.
I saw Eddie the Eagle.
Oh, I didn't.
That is a very good formulaic, like... It's just a sports film.
I want to see that. It's uplifting.
It's a genre pick. And it's good. Everyone in it. It's a very good movie. It's very well done. Okay. Did you see Gods of Egypt?
Oh, no.
Because, no.
Why? No.
London Has Fallen?
I did. It's, yeah.
Is it better than or worse than Olympus Has Fallen?
Tracy Mitchell would like it.
Yes, he would.
That's all I got to say on that movie.
Father, if you're listening... I would love to do a podcast with you about London/Olympus Has Fallen because I know you've seen both of them and love both of them.
For context, since we're still new voices for people listening to this, his dad is the most unabashedly, like, he's just an action film fanboy. Like, he loves The Art of War 4.
If it has Wesley Snipes in it, he will watch it. But that's neither here nor there. I'm going through 2016. I'm trying to figure out if 2017 has been better. So far we have good films like Eddie the Eagle and The Witch. And that's it. Zootopia was good.
Oh, yes.
I own that film on Blu-ray.
I do. Yeah, you owned it so many times you gave me a copy.
I gave you a copy. I have it twice. And it's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Did you see 10 Cloverfield Lane?
I did. Was it good? Like 10 Cloverfield
I still
Lane.
Have yet
John
to see
Goodman's
it.
John Goodman's masterful.
Like to see it. I want to see Midnight Special. I did not see it. I want to see The Lobster. I saw Hello, My Name is Doris, which is a delightful film, which you all should watch.
Interesting. Okay.
Get on that. It's really good. It's a Michael Showalter directed film. I mean, if we want to talk about Batman v Superman, I feel like that could be a whole podcast.
Nope.
I like that movie.
You like the director's cut of that movie. Let's be real.
Yes, I like the director's cut. I also am okay with the original theatrical cut more than most people are.
Yeah, see, I'm not with that movie in the slightest. I just can't. I can't.
And that's... All of the criticism, I understand it. Yeah. I feel it, and I agree with it.
Right.
I'm also not coming at it expecting it to be the most amazing film ever. So that's a discussion for another time. Did you see Everybody Wants Some?
Oh, yeah, dude. Linklater's my guy. Okay. I love Everybody Wants Some. I think that movie's awesome. I've seen that quite a few times. It's on Hulu, so if you have not seen it, stream the hell out of that movie, because that movie's
really
fun.
I've only heard
fun.
Good things.
It's really fun.
The Jungle Book was great.
I know you and your girlfriend liked that movie a lot, and I still have yet to see
it. I saw it twice in theaters and once another time, so I've seen it three times. It is a very, surprisingly so, good movie. It reaffirms that Jon Favreau knows what he's doing behind the director's chair.
Sure.
Because, I mean, if we look at his filmography, not even just his recent track, but his entire filmography, he's got Elf, Iron Man.
I always forget that he directed Elf, because guys, I don't like that movie very much.
Oh, well, that's all. We need to talk about that, because I love Elf.
Tyler, you've known this about me forever. You know I don't like that movie. We watched it every Christmas together for like 5 years in a row. I don't like that movie very much.
Okay, well, we're continuing. This is all about 2016. Huntsman, Winter's War, nope. Hologram for a King, didn't see. Great Book. Keanu was okay.
Eh.
Didn't see the Ratchet and Clank film.
Oh, I did. That's a thing.
It's a movie.
It's a cut. It's just cut scenes with a few other scenes in it. Yeah, and right. I played the game before the movie, and game's awesome. But the movie is literally just that with a few extra moments in it. It's stupid. It's really dumb.
Captain America: Civil War.
Loved it.
Great movie. With the caveat that you care about Marvel characters.
Yes.
Which I feel like this is something I have a big problem with, and I understand why certain film critics they look at every Marvel film as if they have never seen a Marvel film, because they're assuming people will go see it who have never seen another Marvel film, which is probably true.
Sure.
But at the same time, that's a dumb way to grade those movies. They know what they're making. Everyone knows what they're making. Stop grading them on a curve that you're not grading other films on.
Right.
Okay. Neighbors 2.
Saw like 20 minutes of it.
Never seen it. Nice Guys.
Loved it.
Good movie. X-Men Apocalypse is pure garbage.
Yeah, that movie sucks.
Did not see, nor do I ever want to see, Alice Through the Looking Glass, because I never saw the live-action Alice in Wonderland movie anyways.
It's not good.
I saw Me Before You, which is fine for a romantic comedy drama fair.
Sure.
Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping was okay.
I really like
was
it.
Was okay. Really it's no
like
Hot Rod.
It. I really like it.
It's no Hot Rod.
You know that's not a thing most people equate to being good. That's you and me.
I don't care. It's not as good as Hot Rod.
And
the fact that it has 40 higher percent on Rotten Tomatoes is
okay.
Beyond
I'm
me.
Not okay with that, but...
Finding Dory.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Didn't hate it. Did not see Warcraft.
Oof.
We're going to gloss over Now You See Me Too.
Oof.
I did not see The Conjuring 2. I love The Conjuring.
Conjuring 2 is okay. It's fine.
Did not see Independence Day Resurgence.
Nope. My parents watched it the other day. They said it's not good.
The Shallows?
I did see The Shallows in theaters. Not a bad movie.
In theaters?
Yes, sir.
He really just wanted some Blake Lively and bikini up on the big screen.
I like shark movies, dude. Like, I really do. And we don't get enough of them, but I'm not going to see 47 Meters Down.
And what he means by shark here is Blake Lively in a bikini. I just want to make that clear.
That don't, you know, I mean, look, that was, it could have been Steve
no,
Buscemi
I've heard...
in a bikini. If it's a good shark movie, I'd still watch it.
I want to make this clear. I've heard good things about The Shallows. I'm just ragging on you because it's easy.
Yeah,
because
you're a dick.
I am aware.
Not necessary.
Did not see The BFG.
Oh, I didn't either. I never read that book as a kid.
As a book I liked as a kid. I saw The Legend of Tarzan.
Targan. Didn't
Target.
See it.
So Legend of Target and...
With Stellan Skarsgård's kid. Yeah. I'm just going to refer to him as that, even though I know his name, Alexander.
You mean Stellar Skateboard.
Stellar Skateboard?
What? That's a Spontaneation reference.
Okay, that's really funny. I don't know what that is, but that's really funny.
Oh, no, it's not a Spontaneation reference. It is a How Did This Get Made reference.
Oh.
But Paul F. Tompkins was on that episode.
Our favorite.
It is from the Deep Blue Sea episode of How Did This Get Made.
A movie that I really like.
And they are talking about Stellan Skarsgård, and Paul F. Tompkins talks about how when he was typing Stellan Skarsgård into Microsoft Word, it auto-corrected it into Stellar Skateboard. Anyways.
Okay, so we've spent 20 minutes talking about other movies that are Baby Driver.
Well, that was... I'm trying to get to today.
Right.
We are up to July 1st.
Okay.
Of 2016. Do you think that... With films like Ride Along 2, Dirty Grandpa.
Oh, God.
Zoolander 2. Gods of Egypt. I feel like I'm just picking out the worst ones
on
purpose.
Yeah, you're being an asshole right now, but...
Okay, so everything we just talked about, comparatively. This year, I know that you and I have both seen either one of us or both of us. We've seen Hidden Figures.
Mm-hmm.
The Founders, Split. We've seen
Wonder Woman, Logan,
Lego Batman movie, John Wick 2.
Yep.
Hello, My Name is Doris, Logan, Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
This is something we need to talk about. At the end of March, on a glorious Sunday morning, we went to see a film called Power Rangers.
Power Rangers, yeah.
How did you feel about Power Rangers?
You know I like Power Rangers, man.
Power Rangers is not a good movie. Don't take your kids to see Power Rangers.
I like Power Rangers. It's not in theaters anymore. Why do you...
Don't buy it for your kids. Don't rent it for your kids. It's not good.
I like it, okay? I like it. I love the last 13 minutes when they're in the suits.
So...
And I love Billy Cranston.
So. If we keep going, like I'm seeing like Fate of the Furious, which I had no interest in seeing and did not see. Guardians 2, which was okay.
Really liked it.
Did not see Alien Covenant. Did not see it. King Arthur. Did not see Pirates. Did not see Baywatch. Did not see Captain Underpants. I'm feeling like
I want to see Captain Underpants.
It's close. Is what I'm saying.
It's closer than I thought now that you're reading.
Now that I'm reading through all of these, I'm remembering the good movies I saw this year and forgetting the ones that I either saw and hated or have no interest in seeing.
Yeah.
It feels like yet another...
It's pretty neck and neck between last year and this year, I would say.
I mean, it all depends on these next couple of months. I feel like...
I guess summing up, like, I don't... feel like there's been a movie to bookend. I don't think there was a movie to really bookend the first half of last year
like Baby Driver, the way
that Baby Driver has bookended the first half of this year, because
it wasn't like the Legend of Tarzan. Are you sure?
No.
Was it the Purge election year?
Stop.
Was it the BFG?
Stop.
I'm reading things that came out on July 1st last year.
I can't.
Swiss Army Man?
Stop. I literally can't with you right now, even though I hear good things about that movie. But
I mean, it's a farting Harry Potter.
I love Baby Driver, dude. Okay. I think from the opening scene with Baby in the red Subaru just jamming out, like, with his headphones in his ears, like, I was hooked. I was hooked from... moment one. And I think that's always been the mark of a good movie for me, is like I try with everything to give it its due diligence and to like pay attention from start to finish, because I do have a very critical ear and eye, and I want to give everything its just due. But you can tell with me if you're next to me and something's not grabbing my attention. This grabbed my attention from the jump, even before the title card hit.
For the first half of the film, I completely agree. Like, when he, after his first heist that we see, is going through to get the coffee down the street, and it feels like
Singing in the Rain.
I mean,
2017,
it's purely choreographed for the song, and it's beautiful phenomenal. And it's great. That's what I wanted from the whole movie.
Okay.
And, I mean, obviously we'll say that there are spoilers in this. It loses that in the final third, where it just becomes...
It just becomes an action movie. It does.
Where, and I think this is my... As someone who has loved Edgar Wright for over a decade in all of his films, this... while being stylistically a very Edgar Wright film, tonally is by far the least Edgar Wright film he has made.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from the screenplay, that comes from the story itself. Maybe not even the story. I mean, Hot Fuzz is about a cop taking down a bunch of corrupt small town politicians and socialites.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like that's not... that couldn't be some indie action film if it wasn't a parody slash... I mean, Edgar Wright films are a genre in themselves. They are parodies. They are homages. They have heart. They have wit. The Cornetto Trilogy and Scott Pilgrim are films that take film reference, film history, emotion... and cleverness, and throw him in a blender with his frenetic filming and editing style, and they come out and it's unique. You've never seen films like that.
They're like new millennium Tarantino films. And I don't mean that in any negative sense at all. I just mean like he is the guy doing what Tarantino started doing in the late 80s, early 90s.
If Tarantino had more reverence for film editing than he does for dialogue. They are cut from the same cloth in different ways. Yes.
Yes. No, that's why I hesitated to make that comparison, right? Because they're not the same. They're similar in the fact that they are able to take homages to other genres and turn them into complete, well-done films without feeling like they're literally just ripping something else that came before them off.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a film that rips other... This is not... This is a mixtape film. This is taking things from other films. This is gathering things.
That's such a great way to describe it, because it's literally set to a mixtape of music. Yes. And it's masterfully done from that level, I think.
For the first two-thirds of the movie. And then it... And this is why I've always enjoyed Edgar Wright films, is they don't necessarily come back and snap into reality again at the very end and come back to formula. Mm. Like, I mean, I guess at the end of Shaun of the Dead, everything is resolved. At the end of A Hot Fuzz, everything is resolved. And The World's End, everything is resolved. But they don't resolve in the ways that traditional films do. And in this movie, for the first two-thirds, we're getting everything is set to a beat. We have editing and character movement set to a beat. And then the last job comes, and it becomes a shootout. And Baby needs to run for his life with Deborah. And that's what we get.
Right.
And that's it. And then it's over. And maybe upon repeat viewing, it kind of feels the way I felt when I was walking out of The World's End, where I left the theater liking The World's End. I did not leave the theater thinking it was on par with the rest of Edgar Wright's filmology, but
right.
After repeat viewings, while it is still my least favorite, and I think it's worse than Baby Driver, it is still of a quality.
And we got to talk, for obvious reasons, because it's Edgar Wright, we got to talking about that movie before Baby Driver started, and I agreed with you. Like, I literally have not seen that movie since I saw it in the theaters, and it was absolutely my least favorite of the Cornetto trilogy. I'm interested to go back to it now that like I know how you feel about it upon repeat viewing. I'm going to be interested to see how you feel about the third act of Baby Driver going back to it on repeat viewing.
I will see this again sometime in the next 2 weeks, because either my girlfriend will want to see it, or my brother or my dad will want to see it.
I'm taking my folks as soon as I can drag them out of the house.
So maybe I feel differently. I think Ansel Elgort is great. I think actually all of the actors are great.
I think,
even Spacey with his limited.
Oh my God,
Spacey, with his limited. And here's
that
I think,
first sequence with Spacey is so good.
I think reflectively, one of the biggest issues I have outside of the, of course, this is how it's going to end. Ending sort of, I mean, it's playing on tropes, so I guess that's fine. Is Baby and Deborah don't really know each other.
I knew this was going to be the aspect that you were going to bring up. And I do think that the weakest part of this movie is
the romance?
The quote-unquote love story. Because I was thinking about it when we were leaving, and I was thinking about how I think in one way or another, this movie can be for anyone. Like, we're two close friends who went and saw it together, but I think it's just as easy of a movie for you to take a date to, for you to take your parents to, like, for you to go see by yourself if something you're so inclined to do. Because I think there's aspects of this movie that make it available for everyone, no matter what scenario that you're in. But after I was thinking about that, I was thinking, well, yes, but I also think that from a date movie standpoint, I think the romance aspect of it is the weakest aspect of this movie.
But it's
and it's got nothing to do with Ansel Elgort or Lily James.
No, they're both great.
Their chemistry is really good, but they're underutilized as a duo.
It's easy to fix, too. It's super easy to fix. In between when Baby hypothetically gets out and doesn't have to do any more jobs, and when he goes in to do another job for Kevin Spacey's character, Doc, you put a montage in, you put an extra scene in, you do a little more, just a little more character work. It's not that much screen time.
And they could have done, with how well the music was utilized, they could have done a sick montage. Exactly. Like a really good montage.
A musical montage set with different costuming in different locations. I mean, you're going to get that romance.
Mm-hmm.
From the time Baby meets Deborah to the time they are trying to escape for and run away for themselves, they've met twice, been on one date, and then met
kissed
again.
Kissed once.
Like, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you.
It's film logic.
For the sake of playing devil's advocate to your argument, I think it's one of those things where it is that type of classic movie romance that it's like it's legitimately love at first sight, and it's like whether you believe in that in real life or not, that's neither here nor there. It's suspension of disbelief. Like, it feels like a classic film from that standpoint. There's so many classic films that it's like it's love at first sight.
Which is weird to say about an Edgar Wright movie, but yeah.
No, but you know what I'm saying. It's like there's so many old like romance tropes in movies that it's like, well, we meet and now we're getting married. See, because it's like we're in love and old 1950s voice and things like that. So
I want to watch whatever movie that is. I think, and this is me being nitpicky because as a screenwriting person, this didn't sit well with me. And it's a typical Hollywood problem because actresses in Hollywood are gorgeous when...
No. Ridiculous.
When they're first meeting, he says, I think you're beautiful. And she goes, oh, well, you couldn't possibly mean that. And I'm like, yes, Lily James. You're Lily James. You are freaking Cinderella. Of course you're beautiful. Just because you're working as a waitress at a diner in a movie doesn't mean you don't know that you're gorgeous. If anything, you probably know that. We live in a world full of people who take selfies for a goddamn living. You know you're gorgeous. Quit it. No. Doesn't work.
Fair. But I think there's also a level of, like, I mean, just because you're beautiful doesn't mean you don't have your own insecurities. Like, she could just be very insecure and not actually believe that anyone's saying that to her without some hidden agenda.
I'm not arguing that either.
I know you're not.
I'm just saying the line doesn't work. And their chemistry is real, and it feels real.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
And I feel like Jamie Foxx is overused and John Bernthal is underused.
Oh my God, I couldn't agree more with that. John Bernthal was so good in that opening act.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he is the character that doesn't come back later in the movie made me really sad.
Yep.
And I think Jamie Foxx is good. I do. I've always been a Jamie Foxx fan. I wish his best job right now wasn't hosting the Shazam show, because he's so good at acting. He won a damn Academy Award. Like,
he's getting paid a lot of money to
And get your money. I'm not mad.
Cash that check, baby.
I'm not mad at him. I'm mad that that's the best work that he's getting in a quote-unquote starring role. That's neither here nor there. I think he's really good, but yeah, I think John Bernthal could have been great in that same role that Jamie Foxx ends up being as essentially really the main antagonist, more than Kevin Spacey's Doc is when you really get down to it.
Which was a turn that also pissed me off.
Okay, go into it, because I want to hear your reasoning behind it, because I...
Throughout the entire film, Kevin Spacey is fleecing Ansel Elgort's baby for his money. He owes him. He owes him for taking his car. He pays his debt off. He pulls him back in for one more. He doesn't really pull him back in so much as he threatens to break his legs and beat up people he cares about.
And hurt Lily James,
yes, basically. And his foster father.
Yeah.
And at the very end of the film,
he's just
somehow like, he's like, he gives them money and defends them with a shotgun and is like, get out of the country. And I'm like, what?
Do you want to know why that worked for me?
Do tell.
Because of how ridiculous his, like, emotional turn is. When they're standing in Doc's, like, lair, or whatever the hell you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it's Baby facing off with Doc. And then... Deborah, Lily James, comes in and, like, comes right by Baby's side. And Doc, it's one of my favorite lines, and Doc just goes, oh, come on. And he's just like, what? Like, he's kind of like, for me, it was, oh, okay. Clearly, Doc had someone that he cared about that much at one point.
I mean, he says so in now, the elevator.
You're right, right, exactly. And so, but he's just like, well, shit. I wanted this kid to be more like me now, as opposed to me however many damn years ago. I don't know. It worked for me more than it worked for you. I think if that line hadn't been in it, it would have been like just the most ridiculous turn ever. I think it's slightly made better by that. It's still pretty ridiculous from where Doc has been the entire film up to this point, but it worked for me. It worked for me, honestly.
And then I'll bring up one more issue I had, and it tails into another issue. So these final two things. This first one sort of dovetails into two things. The movie would have been better if it was the same crew for every heist. Also, Kevin Spacey says he never uses the same people twice. And then he pulls back characters we've already seen from two different heists for the last heist.
To nitpick, though, he actually says...
the same crew?
Yeah, I know.
Here's my point. From a screenwriting perspective, if you have more screen time with the characters, that gives them more time to gestate, that gives them more time to feel real, that gives the viewer more time to connect with them. So, when we are getting John Hamm as Buddy and his wife, Darling, they're the two heist members who sort of stick up for Baby and don't care about his thing. And, you know, Buddy comes over and they're listening to Queen and they're together and doing all this stuff. If we get that relationship throughout the whole movie instead of just here and here... If that's in the middle heist too, not just the first and the last, then the turn where Buddy realizes he's gonna have to kill Baby because Darling died because of Baby, then that's more emotionally resonant. And it's not emotionally resonant for me because we get 5 minutes of John Hamm before that total instead of 7 or 8 or 9 where he's getting along with Baby. I feel like my whole issue with this film is from a screenwriting perspective, because obviously it's gorgeous and well edited and just
well acted.
Yes, that's not my issue with it. It all stems from the tightness of the screenplay, and that might be because Edgar Wright wrote it himself.
Sure. That's fair. I mean, I don't have any problem with any of your issues with the movie. For me, none of those issues was that glaring that it took away from the overall execution of the film for me. So I leaned over you at one point during the movie because while we were watching, or before this film started, we were seeing clips of a movie that we both love, Drive, that was one of those movies that suffered from marketing itself wrong, because it's not a driving movie. It's not. Baby Driver is a driving movie.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a character study, but it's a driving movie. Drive is a character study that's got two sequences of driving in it. You said it yourself. It's not a driving movie. It's a movie that's got two driving sequences in it, one of which is actually really, really exciting. The other, I really like because of the tension from it. It's one of the beginning sequences. But
well, no, I agree, but we also don't get our penultimate chase in this film either. There is no penultimate chase. If it's a driving film, we don't get the bullet chase. We don't get Gone in 60 Seconds, final end of the movie chase. There's no chase at the end of the film. So that argument doesn't stand up. And I think, I'm serious. I think this is the first film Edgar Wright has sole screenwriting credit from. Which means he convinced the producers and the studio to let him have full creative autonomy on it. Which means it didn't get... I mean, I'm speculating. It could have totally had someone come in and do script doctoring. I have no idea. I could be totally wrong. But it feels like a guy who... It's how Christopher... It's why Interstellar, as good of a movie it is, and I like it, and it's the same thing here. I like Baby Driver. I'm not trying to rag on it. Same thing with Interstellar. Is I see the greatness and I want to grasp it, and it just doesn't get there. It doesn't get there for me in the same way where Interstellar, and it's all screenplay. Interstellar is beautiful. Interstellar is well edited. Interstellar is well acted. It has an amazing score. Same thing with all of Baby Driver, except the score is a mixtape of popular music. The script is not tight enough, and it doesn't pay off.
Okay. I'll argue that I think we do get our penultimate chase. It's just not a straight-up chase in cars.
So it's not a car chase movie?
I didn't say it was a car chase movie. I said it was a driving movie. I did not say it was a car chase movie, because it's not a car chase. It's not Gone in 60 Seconds.
Well, I don't want it to be, because I don't like that movie. I was using it as a reference point.
I actually do like that movie, but I think... As a movie billed as a character study of someone who's a driver, I think it's executed better than Drive is.
Drive is not about a driver.
Drive's about a guy who drives, not a driver, if that means anything. Drive is about a guy who just so happens to drive for a living. I think Baby Driver is about a driver.
There are interesting films.
It's all Baby's been. They say it. It's like he's been boosting cars since he's like could see over the dashboard. So he's been boosting cars for a decade probably. Like Baby Driver is about a driver.
And it's sort of interesting to compare Drive and Baby Driver, because there might not be two working directors today that have as distinct styles as Edgar Wright and Nicholas Winding Refn do. I mean, those are two directors who have a style that if you're watching one of their movies, you're like, oh, this is one of their movies.
It's why they don't work 400 times a year, because not every movie can look like their, can feel like their movies.
I mean, Nicholas Winding Refn has had more duds than Edgar Wright, obviously.
Place Beyond the Pines.
That was not a Nicholas Winding Refn film.
Yes, it was. Wait, which one am I thinking of? I'm thinking of the other one.
Only God Forgives?
Yes. They came out so close to each other that I got those confused, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I wanted to see The Neon Demon. I haven't seen it, but...
I heard okay things.
Right. But those guys have distinct styles. I'm going to see it again. I think it's worth seeing in theaters. I don't want to harp on it too much. I expect a lot from Edgar Wright films, which is why I feel like I'm so critical. It's not like I'm going in there expecting just an okay movie. I'm going in there expecting a film that I'm going to love, because Edgar Wright holds a place in my heart. his films have meant so much to me over the past 15 years. Looking forward to the rest of 2017 film-wise is really interesting.
Is it?
Yes. No, it is. Because if we break it down, and I thought that it wouldn't be, but the more I look at it, the more I'm excited. I mean, like, we have Spider-Man next week, well, which I'm hoping is good.
And by the time you hear this, it'll actually be this week.
Right.
Like, we'll probably have seen Spider-Man by the time this episode comes out.
War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Dunkirk. I'm still holding out hope that Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets is at least fun. It looks ridiculous.
God, that trailer is so dope.
He's talking about the one with the...
Gangster's Paradise.
Gangster's Paradise.
It's so cover. Good. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Instrumental Gangster's Paradise was great.
I need that movie to just at least be okay.
I have high hopes.
Dark Tower.
I don't have high hopes. I want Dark Tower to be good. I'm hoping Dark Tower is good.
Yeah.
I don't have high hopes that it will be.
Oh, I thought you kind of did.
I think
you bought all the books and all the nonsense. I assumed you were like super, super hyped on it.
I'm hyped on it. That does not mean I think it's going to be good. Okay. I read the first Dark Tower book a long time ago, and I liked it a lot. I think Detroit looks good. Oh, I'm hoping Atomic Blonde is good.
After Spider-Man and War for the Planet of the Apes, for obvious reasons, Detroit's my most anticipated movie of the rest of the summer, by far. Like, by far. One, I love Kathryn Bigelow. And two, that's just a really important story that needs to be told, finally. And I'm really, really excited to see it on screen.
I think The Glass Castle looks good. I think... And as reserved as I am about saying this, I think the Hitman's Bodyguard looks fun because I like Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson.
I want that to be good. It's been a while since there's been a comedy that I've actually really enjoyed or really been compelled to go see in the theater.
Yes.
And I think Hitman's Bodyguard is that for me.
I'm nervous about Logan Lucky. I think that Home Again looks pretty good. I think the It remake looks pretty good.
Yeah, I want the
Kingsman single to be good, yes. Sequel to be good.
Is that coming out this year?
Yeah, it comes out in September.
Interesting, considering the first one came out in February. Huh.
Well, the first one made a ton of money and did really well on home media.
That's what I'm saying. I wonder, I don't know why you don't stick with, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, I'm just thinking.
Like, well, I'm looking, it's competition. The week before it is nothing, and the week it comes out has the Lego Ninjago movie and Battle of the Sexes comes out. After that, it's Flatliners and American Made. So.
Oh my god, can we just talk for like 30 seconds about how Flatliners might be the most unnecessary remake of all time?
I think you said it. I think we're good.
Okay, cool.
Cool. October's got Blade Runner 2049, which I hope is good.
Oh, please be good.
It's got The Mountain Between Us, which is the Idris Elba... film with I'm blanking. Kate Winslet. And it does not look like a movie I would ever want to see, but maybe it'll be good, so who knows? I mean, The Snowman is a film that I really, really want to be good, and there hasn't even been a trailer released, but I mean it's Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
So, and Rebecca Ferguson, and I love both of them, so I'm hoping that's great. Thank You for Your Service looks really good. The Bad Moms sequel, that's a Bad Moms Christmas.
I'm with it. I'm so in on that
I
movie.
Really like Bad Moms.
I'm so in on that
that's
movie.
Cool.
Are you kidding me? I love everyone involved with that film.
Thor Ragnarok, that teaser really got me on board.
Yes.
And I like that character. Murder on the Orient Express is something I have...
I'm cautiously
optimistic because the cast is really good. And even Johnny Depp is cast in a role that works for him. If you've read the book or seen any of the other film adaptations, that's a character that if he is restrained, he can pull it off. It's a problem if everyone in that movie is trying to outact everyone else, because there are a lot of people in that movie who want to be screen stealers.
And my favorite thing that you said is using, like, equating Johnny Depp and restrained in the same sentence. Like, that's
he's
just
done
not
it.
A thing.
He's done it. He's
in
done
the
it
last
before.
Decade. Yeah.
As I don't want to say shitty, so I'll say the word abysmal because shitty. It is abysmal. No, abysmal is even worse.
Okay.
As the tourist,
Oh God, no! Stop.
He's restrained in that movie. He's not overacting.
Yeah, I think he was physically restrained in order to, like, actually be on set for that movie.
I feel like him and Angelina Jolie were paid, like, $50 bajillion each, and they didn't want to be there, and they were just kind of both like, okay.
That's the Geely of 2011. Like,
that's giving Geely
a lot of
a shot in the face. No, it's giving Geely not enough credit. Geely was trying to do something, at least. November, we're going through here. Justice League, who knows? Wonder, which is the adaptation of the book about the kid who gets reconstructive face surgery,
right.
Which is supposed to be a great book. Who knows?
Who knows?
Jacob Tremblay is a very good child actor, but that movie is going to hinge on the direction, not the acting.
I'm with it as long as it's not, like, exploitative. That is my only thing about those really, really, like, serious, like, biopic type of films is sometimes they can feel way too exploitative. Like, I thought, and you might disagree, I don't even know if you saw it or not, but I really, really liked, I didn't think I was going to, I really liked Patriot's Day.
Haven't seen it.
I thought it was going to be way more exploitative than it was.
It's a Peter Berg movie, right?
Yeah.
Well, then he doesn't exploit. I mean, it's Peter Berg.
I know, dude, but it just felt so quick for them to basically shoot that movie two years after it happened.
What's the new Jake Gyllenhaal movie about the guy who was in the Boston Marathon bombing?
Yeah, I just watched the trailer for that. That actually
looks really
more,
good,
like,
but exploitative.
It looks more exploitative, but it does look really good. It looks like a lot more emotional.
Yes, it looks.
Turn
it
for,
looks like it's. It looks like Oscar bait more than the Peter Berg than Patriot's Day.
Because, dude, I'll tell you, the second half of Patriot's Day is bananas. Like, it is
stronger.
So well done. It is so well done from, like, an action standpoint. Like, I was not expecting the second half of that movie to be the way it was. I really like Patriot's Day.
Stronger,
yeah,
is the David Gordon Green movie.
Oh, I didn't know David Gordon Green was directing that. That makes so much sense now.
Okay. The rest of 2017, I'm skipping one because we're going to talk about it because you're going to laugh at me. The new Pixar movie, which looks like a ripoff of The Book of Life, but also those movies were in pre-production together, so I'm sick of people telling me that it's a ripoff, because if you're in pre-production at the same time, then everything is a ripoff of everything.
You mean like The Prestige and...
The Illusionist.
The Illusionist.
Because they are movies that have...
Like,
they are movies that are so disparate in what they're doing.
I'm so done with that argument. Like, to this day, that's an argument that one is a ripoff of the other. And it's like, no, that's not how it works.
December's got The Disaster Artist.
Oh, right.
It's got...
Star Wars.
Yes, the new Star Wars. Have you heard of Star Wars?
What is it?
That's a big question. It's got Pitch Perfect 3, it's got The Greatest Showman, the trailer came out this past week, and another one I'm cautiously optimistic about, mm-hmm. even if it is sort of whitewashing some of P.T. Barnum's character flaws. It's a freaking Hollywood movie, of course.
Yeah, I went on a rant about P.T. Barnum the other day, but it doesn't mean the movie's not
going
to be
worth watching.
The
Jumanji sequel, which...
That's a thing.
Is a thing that... looks both terrible and amazing, and I want to see it.
It's got... I mean, I couldn't like the cast more.
I mean, Karen Gillan...
Johnson...
Karen Gillan is basically playing a parody of Lara Croft from the 90s. This is what she's doing. And if that is... I'll see it for that reason alone.
And Jack Black is playing an 18-year-old blonde girl in Jack Black's body. How could you not want to at least entertain that?
I like Dwayne Johnson.
Rock
I like
Dwayne
Kevin
Johnson.
Hart. I like Karen Gillan. I even like Jack Black most of the time. I do like Jack Black. So you know what? I'm in on the Jumanji sequel.
I'm kind
of
in.
But here...
Okay.
I saved this. This is coming out...
I'm scared.
In November. November 10th, which is a Friday. The day before my birthday.
You don't have a birthday.
I know. I just sort of...
You just appeared like from the ether.
I know.
You're like the doctor.
This is a film that is a sequel to a movie I did not see, nor did I want to see. And its quick turnaround makes me nervous about saying this, but I watched the trailer twice yesterday.
Aw, dicks. I know what you're talking about.
You do.
I think.
Daddy's Home 2.
No! No! I can't!
Have you
no!
seen the trailer?
Yes!
It looks funny.
Oh my god.
I know.
I gotta go home. I can't with you. I gotta go hug my mom. Like, I just... Fuck. No! Tyler! That movie is so bad!
How do you know Daddy's Home 2 is so bad? You haven't seen it. It's not out yet.
The first one?
Why have you seen the first one?
I've seen the first one.
When did you see the first one?
When I was on vacation in Wisconsin, and I had, like, plenty of hours to kill at night.
And? Was a gun to your head? Like, what's happening here?
I don't have an answer for you. I watched it.
You don't have kids. You didn't see it with your family.
No.
Then why did you watch Daddy's Home?
I don't know. Because I was drunk, probably.
Not a good enough reason.
That's a pretty good reason.
The trailer for the new one is pretty good.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus. Jeebus.
So, who knows what the book's going to be on 2016 versus 2017. I mean... Just from August 5th, 2016 alone, I feel like 2017 should win because August 5th, 2016 gave us both Suicide Squad and Nine Lives.
Oh,
so, crazy, I mean, that could not be a 1-2 punch of worst films. But, I mean, I like Florence Foster Jenkins. I liked Pete's Dragon. Don't Breathe, The Light Between Oceans, Sully. I mean, there were good movies that came out in 2016.
No doubt.
So, when the book is written, we'll talk about it, but 2016 also gave us the Jack Reacher sequel, which is makes me sad to think about.
Well, to sum up, at this point, Baby Driver is my favorite movie of 2017.
I don't know if I'm confident in agreeing.
That's fair.
But I also don't know what else would be. Because as much as I liked Beauty and the Beast and Logan and John Wick Chapter 2, it's none of those.
Sure. I think it's hard. I think it's hard when those aren't original IPs. And that's there's gonna be, I have a little bit of bias when it comes to something being an original IP as opposed to an adaptation or a sequel, just because we've had so many of those at this point. And I'm not knocking it. Again, I just told you how much I love Logan, and I love John Wick 2, and I love Beauty and the Beast. But for me, the fact that Baby Driver was birthed from an original idea and came to form in what it is phenomenal at this point in movie making society. So that's part of the reason I love it so much.
From the films I've seen this year, it's probably, and as much as I just ragged on it, it's probably a toss up between Wonder Woman and Baby Driver.
Mm-hmm.
And since I have a microphone in front of my face, I just want to get this off my chest now because it's something that the internet needs to understand. As someone who studied film for years and was a film, that's what I studied, film production and screenwriting.
Yeah.
Adaptations, sequels, and reboots have been the crux of Hollywood filmmaking since the 1930s. Get over it. Move on. Write a new article about something that actually matters. That's going to be how they make their bread and butter from now until film is no longer a thing because VR takes over. Get over it. I don't want to see your think piece about how Hollywood is drowning in remakes and sequels and adaptations anymore. That's been Hollywood since Hollywood was a thing. Rant over.
I don't even really want to say anything else. I just kind of want to end it on that. Because you're right.
It is what it is. I mean, before we end it, we need to do, this is this week's consumption, my consumerist week. We need to, we'll quickly go over a couple of things we've done this week. I'll start with my list of things that I have consumed. I watched Fright Night, the 2011 remake, which we saw in theaters when it came out.
I was going to say a movie we saw together when it came out.
Colin Farrell, Anton Yelchin, and David Tennant are amazing. It is not a perfect film. It struggles with its balance between horror and comedy. But it's still enjoyable. I really like that movie. I've only seen it twice. I don't really feel the need to see it again, but I think it's worth a watch. I have, since the last time we chatted about The West Wing, I have gone through the second season. I'm halfway through the third. I put it on in the background when I'm doing other things since I've seen it so many times. I mean, that show is just great. It continues to boggle my mind that we've become more divided since The West Wing, and it brings me back to my own sort of centrist politics, where I am someone who's obviously very liberal, but I feel the need to listen to and work with people who are of the opposite political spectrum from me. That's something that weighs heavily on my mind daily, so The West Wing's good for that. I watched Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, where he highlighted vaccines and why they're important. And if you don't give your kids vaccines, stop listening to this podcast, because I don't want you as a listener.
I don't either.
The NBA draft and all the news. I listened to a bunch of podcasts about that this week.
Yeah.
And free agency, like, that's just weird. This is not a sports podcast. We're not going to get into it. I played Puzzle Quest. The original Puzzle Quest from 2006.
Yes. It's my jam.
And that game is fantastic. It's the best version of Puzzle Quest, even if the story is utter garbage.
It's utter nonsense.
And the UI is terrible. But that game...
screw it. That game is so
good. That gameplay is so pure. And it is the most uncluttered and realist and best version of that type of game.
You can literally get it on anything at this point.
Yes,
so
it's on
just
a million things.
Just get it.
I just downloaded it on my 2DS a week and a half ago.
It's on phones. It's on Steam. It's on Mac. It's just... get it somehow. Yeah. It's like $4.
I played more Solitarica on my iPhone.
My jam.
Which is an iPhone game you should get. Even, I think it's $3. It's $2.99.
Yeah, I got it on sale for $1.99.
It's a great game.
Yeah, it's so
fantastic
good.
Game.
It's so good.
I played finally The Journey,
yes.
Which is a story mode in FIFA 17.
Loved it. I played it. That was literally my first month of playing FIFA 17. All I did was play The Journey because it's really fun, and there's a lot of storyline in that game that has to do with race and like fatherhood, and it was surprisingly touching, especially the first half of the story of that game.
It is much more poignant than something like
Living the Dream in NBA 2K16.
Or even the My Career from 2K17 with Michael B. Jordan. Right. But, and it's funny because, I mean, I get FIFA the day it comes out every year, and I played the first hour of it back in September of 2016 and just bounced off it. And I started a new journey this past week. And there is a poignancy to it. Mm-hmm. There is something about the character moments. And it doesn't feel real. It's still ham-fisted sports story genre affair. But in a way that is more palatable than something that is just so over the top, like 2K's My Career.
It feels more like a sports movie that I would actually like watching than it does just some nonsensical...
It reminds me of something like the Goal films, Goal and Goal 2, if you've ever seen those movies from over a decade ago. And that I might just be comparing them because they're soccer films, but like... I feel like the integration of actual athletes and coaches into The Journey is more seamless than it is in 2K My Career. I've played a lot of 2K My Career.
No, you? No.
And the whole players texting you thing and all of their texts have the same format. It's or ridiculous. And like, Michael B. Jordan texting you the same thing after every other game. And then at the end of the text message, he's like, all right, so tomorrow we're going to get an extra practice and game film session in, right?
Smiley face.
It's like, dude, you've literally, like, I could scroll up my phone and you've sent that exact text to me 20 times.
Yeah.
And some of that comes in with the whole fake Twitter they have in the journey, FIFA 17. Like, some people kind of repeat the same thing.
Sure.
But it's more organic, and some of that might come down to the Frostbite engine being a more robust engine than whatever the 2K engine is. I forget what it is right now off the top of my head. But the 2K animations are rough.
Roof.
And as many issues as I have with Frostbite, especially looking at something like Mass Effect Andromeda, the players, and this might come down to the animators, feel more real. I listened to a lot of Chance the Rapper this week. I was listening to all of his features that I missed over the past couple of years, so that was pretty fun. And going into a couple of comics I read, I primarily read Marvel this past week. I haven't been reading a lot because I've been working. But I read issue 5, which is the final issue of Ed Brisson's limited run of Bullseye. And Bullseye is a villain in the Daredevil canon. And it started off as a promising run. Bullseye is a psychotic person, and it was just the first couple issues were him, his ridiculous. He flicked a paperclip out a window, and it like went through the throat of someone. Like, it's a dumb comic book villainy, and it was really fun. But it ended with a thud. Like, the story just kind of didn't. It wasn't great. The final scene is still pretty good, but I don't really recommend picking up. Apparently, it's all setting up. There have been limited runs of Bullseye, Elektra, and Kingpin. They're all setting up this storyline that's coming up with Daredevil, and I've been reading them, but I don't recommend reading the Bullseye. I read issue number 9 of Champions by Mark Waid.
My guy.
They have a new penciler, Humberto Ramos. And I loved his art style that he used in the issue. This issue focused on Viv Vision, who is the daughter of Vision. I don't know if you read Tom King's 12-issue run of The Vision from 2016, which is like one of the greatest comic stories I've ever read. It might have been one of the greatest stories I've ever read, period. Any of you listening should pick up Tom King's run on the Vision. It's amazing. This issue of Champions also introduced a new heroine called Red Locust, and she seems pretty cool. We get the full origin story and has a great little aside of Viv's memory with her dad, the Vision. She's like, it's a flashback to when the Vision had a full family, which I'm not going to get into spoiler territory, but she asks him, what if Mother objects to nourishing ourselves between meals? And he just looks at her and says, shh, this is father-daughter time. And it's just sweet. Like, the Vision is... anyone who's watched The Avengers or reads Marvel Comics knows that Vision struggles with trying to be human. And it felt like this really human moment from him. So that was really good. I read issue 21 of Daredevil from these past couple of years. And it's a slow setup for this new arc that's starting. And it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I recommend... If you're interested in Daredevil, read it. If you're not, don't. I also read the final issue of Jason Aaron's run on Doctor Strange. And his run on Doctor Strange is something I'm really conflicted about, because I picked it up because I knew that Doctor Strange was coming down the pipeline. So, I mean, he wrote about 20-something issues of this story. So it's been coming for... I've been reading it since... God... Whenever it started, when all new Alter from Marvel started after Secret Wars. And the first few issues were promising, and they were gorgeous, and like it really got me excited for the Doctor Strange movie. But after those first 3 or 4 or 5 issues, it got really stagnant. And I kept reading it because I was like, oh, we're going to get back to how good those first couple were. And it never did, and now he's off the book, and they have some new writers coming in dealing with stuff for Secret Empire and whatever the conclusion of that's going to be.
Yeah.
He introduced a new sort of sidekick for Doctor Strange, And I don't want to go into spoiler territory about what's going on with Wong, but Wong from the Doctor Strange movie, for those who have seen it, has been a Doctor Strange sidekick and stalwart for years and years and years. And he's leaving Doctor Strange for a new character called Zelma, who came to Doctor Strange at the beginning of Aaron's run. And she's a really good character. So I'm really conflicted on his run, because there are some really good issues, and I like Zelma as a character. But I don't really like the state in which Doctor Strange has been left. Mm-hmm. I can't really recommend that people pick it up. I don't know how I feel about it. And that leads me into... I read the first issue of Iceman.
Okay. And
Iceman in the Marvel community has become this sort of sticking point between traditional Marvel fans and fans of new Marvel, and that's a blurry line. That's not a thing that...
Because for those who don't know, he's an out character now.
Yes. But for years he wasn't.
Yeah, and it was a source of...
consternation.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I understand why. For a lot of people, I don't think that they have a problem with Bobby Drake being gay. It's that for 30 or 40 years he wasn't.
Sure.
And then out of nowhere everyone's like, boom, he is.
But it goes back to the argument that you and I always make, which is... kind of get the fuck over it, because it's a comic book. It's like, for 30 or 40 years, Iron Man wasn't a young black woman.
Yep.
Thor wasn't a woman.
Nope.
Like, get over it. It's just... guys, I don't know if you realize this about comic books, but at some point, things will probably go back to the way that you know
Marvel's
it.
That's on their way
kind
to correcting
how
all
that,
that
works.
Because they're struggling with sales.
Which sucks, because, dude... I really like that Iron Man is a young black woman now. I really
so
like that Thor is a female character. I really like that Bobby Drake is
the Mighty
an
Thor,
out character. Like
Ironheart, those are all characters I love. All of this...
it's frankly disheartening that we can't make this shit work the way it is now. Because that says a problem. That's a problem with the comic book community as a whole, then. If we're not selling while things are different. If you just want a bunch of... normal white dudes as all your comic book heroes, that says that there's something inherently wrong with that.
And I don't think Marvel's going to course correct that harshly. I mean, Marvel Legacy is the thing that's coming out.
Yeah.
They're going to keep... I mean, think about someone like Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, who's been a runaway success. Her book is really popular.
Yeah.
She's more popular right now than Carol Danvers, but that's because Civil War II was a train wreck.
Mm. Spider-Gwen's doing well too.
I don't want to characterize, and it's something I struggle with as a comic book fan. I don't want to characterize comic book fandom as a bunch of closed-minded white guys reading comic books in their basements of their parents' house. That is reductionist and stupid. And there are a lot of comic book fans who are inclusive and love all these new characters. But at the same time, and it's the way that a bunch of my family has reacted to Paul George leaving the Pacers, is they're mad at Paul George. And it's a reaction to change. Everyone reacts to change differently. Some
Sure.
people lash out. Some people internalize. It's... messing with something as fundamental to a bunch of kids growing up with comic books, if someone's grown up with Thor or, sorry, Odin's son, or Tony Stark as Iron Man, or Peter Parker as Spider-Man, since they were kids and now they're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, and Marvel, it can be, if depending on the website you're reading or the way you look at the world, is... throwing away old characters in favor of new ones to try and sell comic books, I understand that that can be frustrating. I don't think that's what Marvel's doing. I don't think Joe Quesada is that kind of guy. And he is a Marvel geek who has
yeah.
a reverence for all of these old characters. But I could be wrong. So...
I guess it's not fair to me for me to generalize that much, and maybe it does stem from the fact that I would classify myself as a casual comic book fan. I'm not a diehard, so I don't get getting up in arms about a classic character being completely changed the way that Iron Man or Thor has. But at the same time, I guess I just don't understand the need for a character to stay the same
right.
for decades and decades and decades and decades, because if that happened on television, I mean, that wouldn't happen on television, with the exception of one show being The Simpsons. Like, that's the only show that's been on for three decades where the characters have stayed the same. I don't know. I'm really glad Marvel is trying to do more, like, have more diversity in their comic book universe. I guess I can understand why people would be upset with such a drastic change, but I don't know. I don't see why it's as big of a deal, and why it's I just wish it wasn't affecting sales the way that it was. Right. I guess is that my point at the end of the day.
I feel like, and I need to correct myself, because obviously Axel Alonso is right now the editor-in-chief of Marvel, not Joe Quesada. He replaced him. But the problem that Marvel's having is they're putting out so many friggin' books every week. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's not that...
So many books at $4 a pop? Like, dude, that adds up so quick.
Like, I don't know what their weekly average of books is, but I know it's... They routinely put out over 20 books a week. And if you want to be well-versed in their universal chronology and read all of their stuff, then, God, that's so much money. And a lot of those books aren't great. Or they vary in quality from issue to issue in a way that they didn't used to.
Yeah.
And that fosters some sort of... that people want to hate on it. Because that's people.
Yeah.
And that's the way we live. But that's, you know, our comic minute / 10 minutes of my consumerist week. Do you have anything you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, most of my week was honestly, I had to do so much work with, like, the NFL draft, the NHL draft and, like, NHL trade stuff that, like, that just kind of consumed my week. I did get to, for my mom's retirement, my mom just retired as of Thursday, so congrats to her. I bought her this really nice soundbar system for, like, her TV downstairs. And to test that out yesterday, I watched Doctor Strange.
I was thinking about rewatching that again sometime soon.
God, I really like it. That's another movie that's got an opening scene that really, like, captivates me. I really like that opening sequence. I also, you know, I was just on a Marvel kick, so I also watched Civil War for the first time since I saw it in theaters last year. That's another movie that I just really, really enjoy. That's a movie that for me, I think the second half captivates me more than the first half of that movie does. I think the second half of that movie is masterful in its execution. I watched part three of The Ranch with Ashton Kutcher, Danny Masterson, and Sam Elliott.
I just can't even with you right now.
I'm sorry. Look, that show's not good, but if there's one reason to watch it, it's crotchety Sam Elliott, because Sam Elliott's phenomenal. He's just a great actor.
Because we don't have enough of Sam Elliott being crotchety in other things.
Okay, dog, what has anyone our age that doesn't, like, isn't a movie or television buff, what has anyone in the past decade seen, like, from Sam Elliott? Name one.
I don't care.
I defy you.
They don't have to watch The Ranch.
Okay, whatever. It's a show. It's a thing that exists. Throw it on in the background. Watch Sam Elliott. Be great. Other than that, honestly, I've been listening to a ton of music. We saw a great concert from Bleachers. And the opener was this band called Muna. It's just MUNA, all capitals. It's this band from three women that are just phenomenal. It's kind of like electronic pop rock, I guess you might classify it as. It's really phenomenal. They put out an album just before that concert. Yeah, in February. What's it called?
About you. I have it on vinyl now.
Yeah, you've got it on vinyl. You, myself, and your girlfriend Katie all have t-shirts from the band. My t-shirt made my mom very confused as to why I was wearing it, because it's a woman with another woman's thumb in her mouth. So that's interesting, but I think it's a great t-shirt.
It's provocative.
Gets the people going.
Okay, well.
So yeah, that album's awesome. I really think you should check that out. That's one of those albums where I think it's a really accessible album. One, because I read an interview with the lead singer of that band, and they all identify, all three of the women, both the guitar players and the lead singer.
All three of them both?
I said both of the guitar players and the lead singer, asshole. They all identify as queer. And yeah. So they were talking about when writing that album, it's like, one of the main things they wanted to do is make that album accessible for everyone. So they left out any like defining pronouns in the song. So it's like, there's not a he, there's not a she, there's not anything like that. And when you really listen to it, you can really tell that like they're trying to make an album that's accessible for anyone. It's an album about love at the end of the day in a lot of ways. And I think it's really accessible for anyone. It's my favorite thing to listen to right now. Like I'm loving that album so much. And I loved that concert that we went to. Yes,
both Muna and Bleachers were great in concert. Jack Antonoff is one of my favorite musicians. Even if I have reservations about the quality of his newest album.
Yeah.
Him and his touring band were great
so
live.
So good. So good. They did a great cover of Fleetwood Mac's Go Your Own Way, which is one of my favorite songs. And I really dug that. And besides that, I've been playing a lot of the crap. I played, when I got home last night from my cousin's retirement party, I drunkenly played a bunch of the first Crash Bandicoot game, because I got the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. God, that game is so good and so hard.
Yes.
Holy crap, game is hard.
Yes.
It's...
Were you not reminded of this?
No, I did. I haven't played a game. I haven't played a Crash game in 12
years. Were you not
years.
Reminded of this when playing the Crash Bandicoot section of Uncharted 4?
I mean, I crushed that, dude.
I did not crush that. I couldn't even crush that. So, yes. Like, I remember when I was 7 years old, Crash Bandicoot being a thing that I could not do. So, yeah. I imagine that it is still difficult. It's difficult on purpose. Like old NES games are hard on purpose. Because you're spending all this money on a game that is this long, and to make the game feel longer, you make it harder.
It is really fun, though, and man, did they do a great job of rebuilding that game from a graphical standpoint. It looks beautiful. Like, the animations are phenomenal. Crash looks great. Like, it's really fun, and it was worth the $30 for three games. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that does it pretty much for me.
Well, that was our Consumerist Week for the last week of June 2017. God knows when you're listening to this.
Probably a week from the last week of June.
That's assuming everyone that listens to this will hear it the week that it's posted, which is...
Oh, that's a thing. Yeah. At least, like, we're not, like, we don't really date ourselves. Like, you can consume any of this shit anytime, so.
Yeah.
It's kind of how that works.
Anyways, check us out at flyoverstate.org.
Yep.
We'll have all our podcasts, all our posts, all our information. You can follow us on Twitter. All that fun stuff is on flyoverstate.org.
Yep, our release schedule, everything. Just go there. It's easier than us taking 5 minutes to tell you where everything is.
If this was a YouTube video, I'd tell you to like, comment, subscribe.
Don't do that, because we're not there. That would be weird if you liked, commented, and subscribed something you thought was us. That's clearly not us.
Like, comment, subscribe.
Don't stop. Go see Baby Driver.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. See Baby Driver. And that's going to do it for us. I hope you guys have a great night, evening, morning, day, week, weekend, month, year.
Yo,
whatever.
Do we have a sign off yet? Like, go forth and consume or something. I don't know. I'm going to edit that out.
No, don't edit it out. Leave it in. If you want it to be go forth and consume, let us know. But it won't be that, so don't worry about it.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.